Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of May, 2017, after 1 o'clock. Many apologies, few technical problems there. Whether or not it was the Russians, we don't know. But we're delighted to be with you this morning, or this afternoon, very sorry. And of course, we've got some major events unfolding in the UK.
Mike. Well, we were going to have Patrick Henningsen with us, but unfortunately the technical gremlins have prevented that at the moment. So we are joined by David Ellis, which is nice.
Excellent.
Yeah. OK, let's get straight on with it then. And of course, the picture of the day, the events in Manchester. What can we say about it, Brian? Already lots of questions to be asked. But I suppose the biggest part of this is the political capital, which is being drawn from it. It is incredible. We have suspended the campaigning for the general election. Theresa May saying that on one hand, we're not going to let terrorism win. On the other hand, we suspend our democratic process.
In order to fight terrorism.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've got to say that I only learnt about this fairly early this morning. I was looking at general news over the internet. I then started to come across the BBC reports. And what absolutely fascinated me was the type of statements that were appearing on the BBC updated news. So we had the chief of police saying it was one man. I found that very interesting. How did he possibly know that? And then as I watched that report updated to say it was now one man and a network of people. But there was no evidence to support anything around that statement. And I wonder why the chief constable would be conducting an investigation, but making these statements that apparently we knew it, but we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, so
confusion at best, I think.
Absolutely, yes. But of course, we have all kinds of useful information appearing in the mainstream media at the moment.
We do, yeah. I just picked up on this. This was being tweeted out, but I thought it was a useful image which shows the basic layout. And of course, the important thing to take on board, it was the foyer area where we're told an explosion took place. But I find it interesting, Mike, that when an explosion, just hold that on screen for a second.
Yeah, sure.
When an explosion takes place, a suicide bomber in the Middle East, then the BBC, the mainstream media, they want to show us the graphic pictures of the bodies. They want to show us the devastation. But so far, we have seen no video evidence of the bomb going up. All we're able to see are clips of people's phones, which in fact capture the sound of an explosion. And I find this very interesting because, of course, the foyer of a major public venue, we can expect to be covered with CCTV from numerous angles. Big venue like this is going to be heavily covered by CCTV. And yet we have no actual footage of this bomb going off. And I find this very strange. We don't know exactly what happened. But personally, I find this very strange that there's no video footage of the actual explosion, and there's certainly no video footage of the bodies and general carnage. Now, I'm not asking this question out of a sense of some macabre interest. I'm asking this question by the fact that when we have people in the Middle East who are blown up and seriously injured, then what is the duty of the BBC? It's to get in there and get the pictures of that carnage. But in Manchester, we've got a bomb, we've got 22 people killed. How many others were maimed, we don't know.
Well, but the last count was 57.
57, thank you. But we have no video evidence. Very, very curious.
So let's have a look and see what Amber Rudd had to say. She said, "I know that some people will only just be waking up to the news of the horrific attacks in Manchester last night. This was a barbaric attack deliberately targeting some of the most vulnerable in our society, young people and children, out at a pop concert. My thoughts and prayers go out to the families and of the victims that have been affected, and I know the whole country will share that view. I'd like to pay tribute to the emergency services who have worked throughout the night professionally and effectively. They've done an excellent job. Later on this morning, I'll be attending COBRA, chaired by the Prime Minister, to collect more information to find out more about this particular attack. And I can't comment any more on that at the moment. The public should remain alert, but not alarmed. If they've anything to report, they should approach the police." Now, Theresa May also made a statement She said that this was among the worst terrorist incidents that we have experienced in the United Kingdom. And she said that all acts of terrorism are cowardly acts, attacks on innocent people, but this attack stands out for its appalling, sickening cowardice, deliberately targeting innocent, defenseless children and young people who should also have been enjoying one of the most memorable nights of their lives. So she suspended the general election, terrorists win, and both she and Amber Rudd highlighting the fact that children are affected by this.
Children.
And Brian, I believe that the way that this is being presented in the media, highlighting the children issue, is a cynical attempt to make up for, that's perhaps not the right way to counter the Rashdeen bus bombing. Bearing in mind that the people responsible for the bus bombing in Rashdeen, and if you remember, what happened was that people were being evacuated from terrorist-held areas in Syria, and the buses were at a staging area run by various terrorist factions, al-Nusra types, and the White Helmets were there, of course. And the children that were being held captive on these buses were taken off the buses at some point, enticed off the buses with offerings of food, and particularly crisps. And if we remember, of course, while they were on the buses, they were not being fed, so they were pretty hungry. They were enticed off the buses. And as you can see from the image on screen there, a suicide bomb was exploded in the midst of these children. It was the most disgusting war crime. And this, the way that this latest event is being portrayed in the press at the moment, highlighting the children that have been killed and injured, is to counter this, I believe, and it's pretty cynical if that's the case.
Yeah, and what I will say is that I paid attention to what Theresa May had to say. I find her delivery in general, but certainly in cases where there should be some proper emotion, there is no emotion from the Prime Minister. She is reading very badly what is obviously a carefully constructed script. Her delivery is rather halting. There is no proper emotion. And are we really thinking about re-electing this lady as Prime Minister when she can't think for herself? Somebody's got to write a script, even when, according to her, children, because this is what she's kept saying, children have been killed and injured in this blast. I find this extraordinary. Later in the news, we're going to be talking about the Tory party's immense control over news and information that's coming out. I sense that something's not right with this. And Theresa May, she's not talking as a woman who's devastated to hear this news. I don't detect the compassion. I detect a woman who is carefully sticking to a script that would have been produced by Tory HQ. And what we're going to be looking at a little bit later is the types of people who are now controlling the Tory party in the lead up to the election.
Right. Now, so that's a very good point, because in her statement, Theresa May said she would be chairing the COBRA committee, and then she would be going to Manchester to meet the chief of police, to meet the mayor, to meet a whole bunch of people. At no point were the families of the victims mentioned. So she's not going to meet them. So what kind of woman is this?
I think she's very cold, but I think something worse than that, Mike. I think this lady is now demonstrating that she is absolutely a puppet. She is controlled every minute of the day. And while these events unfold, however they've been created, Theresa May has to stay on Conservative script. And I wonder whether we might just bring in David Ellis here, because, David, I know that you are interested in the way that the Tory party is controlling things around the election. We've got some material to do with the military, which will be coming up, but just give us a snapshot on your thoughts. And I know you're already catching up on this news because you've been heavily occupied with another matter this morning.
Yeah, Mike, I think you're bang on there with this sort of first thing would be families, surely. You know, you've got children and mums and dads and been killed in this. You would instantly be families. So, you know, I'm not hearing that. I don't like any of this at all. I don't like the way it's being handled in the media. I don't like the chief constable coming out and inverting something. His statement should have been, "The serious incident took place and we're conducting an investigation. Stop." You know, if he's investigating an individual or a network, surely he wouldn't be talking about that because he's giving the game away. Just come out, just make a factual statement. You know, we are investigating this. And say something appropriate to the families. So I'm not getting that, but I think the inversion all round, really, because surely the best thing to do if you're fighting terrorism on our own turf like this is, you know, I can't see how it serves anyone that we suspend the general election campaign, because surely we should campaign harder. But in effect, what's happened is all we've got is Theresa May and Amber Rudd all over the news.
Yeah. Well, this,
so, you know, that's I just can't, you know, the other parties want to get a grip here because they're, you know, this is almost like sort of, oh, how can you say? I mean, it's just breathtaking. I mean, it's just not right. It's as simple as that. It just isn't right. All of it.
This is a very interesting comment from you, because I think more and more people in this country are coming up with this comment. Something's not right. They can't put their finger on it. You're pointing out we've got leaders being brought forward, using that term deliberately. The only people who ever comment, Michael Fallon, Theresa May. Now we've got Amber Rudd. Where is the local MP? Surely that's the person, or the local MP should know what's really going on here. They're representing the community, should be. Where are they in the mainstream media? Nothing to be seen so far.
As you would expect, perhaps after the event itself, this was a few hours afterwards, I think this was about 1 o'clock in the morning or so, more security operations going on, a controlled explosion on what Reuters here is describing as a device near Manchester Arena. I don't know what that was. It was probably somebody left a bag lying around or something like that. But of course, we had lots of comments from eyewitnesses. What surprised me a little about some of the comments from eyewitnesses was that they were describing seeing bodies and so on, but it was all kind of sterile. And really, you know, I'm not going to apologize for showing the next image, but I do strongly suggest that if you're sort of a weak disposition, sort of look away, because you know, this is the reality of what goes on in Syria whenever these types of events take place. And so I'm not going to leave that on screen for too long. But the point is, you know, if you listen to some of the eyewitness reports,
it's horrific.
The eyewitness reports from this event seem to describe something which is rather sanitized, and it doesn't quite add up.
Yeah,
that's all I want to say on that. Next comment. Not quite sure when our ambulance men started wearing hard hats to these types of things, but of course this again sort of reinforces the white helmets image of first responders.
Yeah, yeah, but this is paramilitary type dress, which is very interesting that there's a uniform is a uniform, but we're now starting to see a uniformity which is expanding across the world. We've got paramilitary police, we've got paramilitary paramedics.
Yeah.
With hard hats. And I think we should say that within our own chat box, we have somebody saying that the daughter of somebody known to the person speaking in our chat box has suffered in the attack. So in making the statements that we're making, we are simply pointing to things around this incident where we say we're puzzled as to what's being said, we're puzzled as to some of the actions, but we're certainly not detracting from the fact that it does seem at the moment that some form of dangerous incident took place and people have been killed or hurt. It's what is happening around this incident that we're interested in today.
One of those other incidents was this, because this was being pushed out via Sky News. It was obviously on CBS, but it was being pushed out via Sky News. And it appeared to show people running away from the scene. And yet what we have here within the building, it seems, is are these supposed to be parents of young people that are at the concert, standing around, hands on hips, some people filming with cameras. I'm sorry, but in a terrorist incident, the building is in the process of being evacuated. Yeah. You do not have people standing around like this, Brian.
Yeah, There are so many things about this, Mike, which I find strange. One of the things that I was curious about is what instructions was this audience given? And this morning we discovered a clip which had the audio. You could hear the tannoy going, and a man was saying, "Well, don't bunch up, don't run." That was all normal sorts of instructions. But the music was continued to play in the background. So at a time when you would want an absolutely crystal clear means of addressing people and giving them instructions and calming them down, they continue to play the music and say, more or less, there's not a problem, when in fact there was a major incident. And I know there are many Americans in this country, but I found it very strange. It was an American, to me, it was an American voice that was speaking out.
Yeah, it certainly was. And of course, this image doing the rounds as well, also via CBS here, of the boy with the little dog. Clearly, he was not in the venue itself, because I'm not aware that you're allowed to take dogs to pop concerts. Maybe you are these days, I don't know. But this image, again, to reinforce
children.
Presence of children, yes. Yes. So, well, in the meantime then, it appears that ISIS is claiming responsibility for this. So let's have a look at what they had to say.
In the name of Allah, the merciful, the grateful, this is only the beginning. The lions of the Islamic State of Iraq and Sham are beginning to attack all the crusaders. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Okay, so, well, there you go. That's what they said. Now, Alex Thompson, Vanessa asked Alex to have a listen to that and see what he thought about perhaps where this person has come from that has made this statement. And so he believes that it's a Turkish accent, that he's a Slav from, and so on. So, I'm not going to read all this because it's quite technical, but he makes the point that only Arabic and Turkish stress Iraq in the way that this person did. As I say, I'm not going to read out all the details, but it's a fairly strong analysis of where this person come from.
Which again is it's a factual analysis, but all it says is that is this exactly what it appears to be?
Well, and of course the key point to remember here, of course, is that Turkey is where a lot of the so-called terrorists or the so-called rebels rather that are being sent into Syria are being trained, and they're being trained by British military and British assets and British money. Which brings us perhaps to the next question, Brian. Who is responsible for this? Because a lot of the coverage on the BBC this morning on Radio 4 was is the Muslim community going to be blamed for this? And of course, there's somebody has been responsible for this directly, perhaps a group of people responsible for this directly. Yeah. But ultimate responsibility must lie with the people who are funding these organizations and funding the activity in southern Turkey and into Syria.
And of course, we have overwhelming evidence of the amount of money that the British government is pumping into organizations and areas where it's clear they are organizations and areas fomenting terrorism. So bizarrely, we have the British government pumping money into or very close to terrorist organisations.
So this brings us back to Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Amber Rudd, perhaps, certainly Michael Fallon, and who else? Priti Patel. Are we really going to re-elect these people?
Yeah, and I think I've also got to add here, what an incredible time, because we don't have a full and proper government at the moment. We're in this no man's land. So we've got a small group of individuals who are very close to acting outside constitutional law, making decisions behind closed doors about these very important matters of terrorism, the response. Are we going to see Theresa May say behind closed doors, it's now time that all police in UK are armed? Is she going to make that as a unilateral decision, or is she going to make it with a small group of people in secret behind closed doors, with absolutely no debate in Parliament? This is very, very dangerous dangerous times, Mike, dangerous procedures going on. And I think we've got to say very, very dangerous individuals such as Theresa May.
Right. And so finally, before we leave this and move on, Of course, if we look back at some of the major terrorist incidents in the West in the last lot of years, there seems to have been a coincidence of drills going on around the same time in around the same locations, sometimes in specifically the same locations and even in specifically the same day. So I wondered what the situation was in this case. Let's have a look because, here we've got a Russia Today report from May the 10th in a shopping mall in Manchester. And this was indeed a drill. So maybe these things are happening all over the country at all kinds of times. Maybe this is just a coincidence.
Maybe it's just a coincidence, but isn't it fascinating? It takes once again Russia Today to start to put some of this information in front of the British public. I'm going to say detached, a sort of staying detached analysis by the BBC. We haven't got any of this type of material being analysed in front of the public by any of the British mainstream channels. And what I found remarkable about this is there's something, I know there are some very good groups of people, very highly trained, who produce scenes of accidents and major incidents in order to train ambulance crews and first responders and all those people. And I know they're very skilled. I know they've produced very skilled casualties. But there is something very theatrical about these. It's almost like you're watching some sort of Hollywood thriller where this is the American police and the helicopters will be up there. David, I'm just going to ask you to come in, and I know you're already trying to catch up with some of this stuff. So just to be, we're giving an analysis here. Are we missing the point, or are we seeing things differently from the way that the British public might see them? What's your gut feeling about what we're watching? Yeah.
Well, one thing's for sure, you know, when you've got, you know, people of no feeling and questionable moral caliber in high offices, that you've really got to sort of look at the whole sort of full circle of this situation. You know, clearly you've got Pat Henningsen and Vanessa Beely have made these links between the Foreign Office and the White Helmets and al-Nusra, you know, and that's still not properly come to be outed by the mainstream media in this country. And then you've got, you know, this sort of round circle of we're fighting terrorism. Well, if you are, why on earth hasn't that been scrutinised and stopped? And, you know, why are you not letting the people of the East sort this out rather than interfering and making it worse? If you're saying that, you know, you want to stop terrorism and whatnot, then actually start doing the talk. Start doing the walk rather than doing the talk. So I've got to say, you know, I have no confidence whatsoever in Mrs. May and her cabinet. And I don't have any confidence at all in what we're seeing from the mainstream media on this, particularly because there's been a precedent during Brexit for this as well, where everything's been skewed away from the reality. So, you know, particularly where sources are concerned. So, you know, I don't like any of this. I think if there's going to be a proper investigation, then let the police and the counterterrorism people do their job, and let's start being a bit more objective. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you on this. I don't like any of it at all. It's just fundamentally wrong from top to bottom, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. So just one final point then. The question is, this is clearly going to be used for political capital. And the question is, what kind of political capital is it going to be used for? A couple of weeks ago, I posted an article on the Column website suggesting that the next 40 days, is this from when I posted it, up until the general election, were a particular danger time for military action in Syria. And the reason for that simply was that if we look back at 2013, for example, the only thing that prevented us going into Syria at that point was a House of Commons vote. Yeah. And of course, while the House of Commons is dissolved, there's no opportunity for such a House of Commons vote. In 2013, the United States was not able to proceed because they didn't have the British with them. They felt they couldn't proceed on that basis. And in this case, we've got Theresa May in a position where she can hold some COBRA meetings, make some decisions. There's no parliamentary oversight for the government's actions. The government still exists, even though Parliament is dissolved. And so that is a pretty dangerous situation. The other aspect to this, Brian, is it not, is that we run the risk of a ramping up of civil contingencies in this country, again, with Parliament not being there to scrutinise this, it becomes a pretty dangerous situation.
I think things are moving very quickly, rapidly moving to an extremely dangerous position in this country. Of course, UK column almost alone warning about what Theresa May was building while she was Home Secretary. We had this phenomenal network of organisations spying on the public. The key one for me was the multi-agency public protection arrangement, MAPA, 63 teams across the country linking together the police, education organisations, local council, mental health, children's services, charities, and they could take anecdotal information and log it against an individual who any one of them deemed could be a threat to society. And those individuals forming the MAPA teams, meeting behind closed doors, no accountability, you could be flagged up as a potential risk. Why? Somebody made an accusation in a pub behind your back. That's picked up by the MAPA team. Now you are already on the path to be labelled a terrorist or a vexatious person, whatever it is. And then on top of that, we've had the PREVENT strategy come in, where we've had Metropolitan Police themselves saying this is unbelievably dangerous. It's the PREVENT strategy which is actually winding up terror via the targeting of youngsters in schools. So Theresa May, Home Secretary, built a Stasi network, and now she's in the position where she can use that network to get her next political agenda in place. Yeah. She is a very dangerous lady.
Yeah. And perhaps this is just another coincidence, but today is the OSCE-wide Counterterrorism Conference 2017, Preventing and Countering Violent Extremism and Radicalization that Lead to Terrorism. It's taking place in Vienna. It's today and tomorrow. 500 experts, they say, from across the OSCE to gather for the annual counterterrorism conference. It's this year organised in Vienna by the OSCE chairmanship. Violent extremism and radicalisation that lead to terrorism is a threat faced by both OSCE participating states and their partners for cooperation at this and is high on the OSCE agenda. So there is British representation on that. And they're going to discuss, among other things, national experiences and international cooperation in countering terrorism, good practices from the region on rehabilitation and reintegration strategies, and the prevention of radicalization. So perhaps they'll be discussing the PREVENT strategy and how successful it hasn't been.
It's all coincidence, though, that that's taking place. Just a coincidence.
Absolutely.
Well, what we need to do is put the media on trial, of course, because as far as we're concerned, we cannot rely anymore on any of the mainstream channels to get out the truth of what's happening. So this event, which is Sunday, the 11th of June, 7 p.m., we're saying, it's in Froome. You need to get along too, because, of course, Patrick Henningsen and Vanessa Bealey are going to be dissecting what's actually happening in the news. So yep. This is going to be a must-attend event. Now, people often say to us, what are ordinary people doing to try and counter these political events? And I'm delighted to say that down in Cornwall, it's been the team around Penzance that have really been working hard over the last few years. They've got an event coming up this Thursday, so that's May the 25th at 7:30 in the Lugger. That's the Promenade in Penzance, where they're talking about austerity and the national debt, the big lie. Now, this is absolutely on the button. And if you say, why should I show an interest in a small group of people giving a talk? Well, let's just bring in this. I was provided today with this letter by the Penzance team. And it's a remarkable letter from the Rothschild Bank to the Chancellor, saying what their recommendations are for the selling off of banks. It's a bit like the poacher and gamekeeper all in one go. But here we are, wet ink signatures, so we know we're looking at the real thing. If you want to hear more about this and understand the scam of austerity and the scam of the national debt, then perhaps you might like to attend the lugger there on Thursday. Now, we'll also bring in AV8, which took place over the weekend. Mike and myself and Patrick Henningsen were there. Absolutely fantastic. It was sold out, so the whole hotel was full of people attending the event. And the talks were really tremendous. There was such a variation. They all, though, linked together. I'll just bring in Patrick Henningsen. I had to take this shot because Patrick was, of course, talking about his time in Syria. And he was there in Palmyra showing the destruction and talking about what was really happening on the ground in Syria. We have yet to see or hear this level of analysis from the BBC, but he was just one of the speakers. And then I'm going to bring up this one, which was absolutely astounding. This was an Albanian gentleman. I'm not even going to attempt to...
Well, I'll see, but we're not going to attempt his surname because it is a problem for us.
We're not going to attempt his name, but we are going to be speaking a lot more about this. This man, in very good English, gave a fantastic presentation detailing the utter destruction of Albania ever since the European Union got its hands on the country. And if you wonder what he's looking at on screen, this is a blow from fracking, which is now being taking place on a massive scale in Albania. And he showed video of the damage and destruction of the village and countryside around this fracking site. It was horrific. Pollution, flooding, poisonous gases. It was a scene from hell. And where did he go from after this shot? Very quickly, he was showing that Tony Blair is now one of the lead advisors to the Albanian government. And if you think that's bad, then I'm going to say what's worse is that Sherry Blair, it would now appear, is an advisor to the Justice Department of Albania. Moreover, she seems to be in control of the system of judges in Albania. But the man, of course, behind the fracking, putting in the money for these sites, is George Soros. And a key part of this presentation was the utter destruction of industry in Albania, which, as the gentleman said, had forced the emigration from Albania and forced the immigration into other Western states. So I've got to say, out of all the talks, I found this one the most powerful. And we hope to be bringing you more information about this situation. It details the secret government of Europe destroying a country in order to rape its assets, steal the oil, and drive people from their homes. Truly remarkable.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, he also did mention fracking, but this wasn't the main part of his talk. But that image, the point that Ian made afterwards was, of course, the areas of the UK that the fracking companies want to frack are much heavily densely populated, much more heavily populated than this area of Albania. This was absolutely undermining the foundations of all the houses in the towns and villages that they are fracking in. Are we going to see this type of environmental destruction here? It's looking like it.
Yes.
Certainly, let us remember if the Tories get in, because they are intending to remove this issue of fracking from the local council planning arrangements. So they'll have a free hand to do as they wish.
Okay, now with an eye on the clock, I better just add to that, Mike. Of course, one of the speakers at AV8 was Piers Corbyn, who was talking about climate change. He gave a fascinating talk, but it was very interesting that he was constantly speaking to people at that event. And we know that one of the things he said is, my goodness, so many nice people who understand what's really going on. So I didn't get the opportunity to speak to him myself, but people who did speak to Piers Corbyn said this man was on the ball. He understood what was happening. And we just wonder whether he's got sufficient connection with his brother, Jeremy Corbyn, to get this information through. But of course, one of the videos he watched was that Albanian video, and he must have had some real information to take back to his brother about what Tony Blair really is, and of course, how Tony Blair destroyed the real Labour Party.
You mentioned the clock. I'll just remind you we started 10 minutes late, so don't worry too much.
OK, thank you for that. It's been a very interesting morning. Right, let's move on. Now, David Ellis, you have been warning us about the fact that we're seeing EU military unification. Under the lie of Brexit, British military forces cut and cut and cut to bring them on a strength parity with other European countries for this formation of the EU military beast. We're going to have a look at some of the background behind this in the next couple of minutes. But just take us into this tweet about from Brexit Central about one of these EU military headquarters.
Well, this is astounding, isn't it, from Brexit Central? You know, we're spinning out a complete distortion of the truth and reality here. I believe it's come from a Telegraph article that they're propagating themselves as well as referring to them as call centres. So they're trying to play it down. There must be some utter desperation here because this is an utter nonsense. And as much as we've sort of tried to propagate amongst our network and the greater network in the independent media, these EU military command and control centres are pan-European. They can affect, and this is on an authenticated source who's an admiral, that these things can conduct pan-European military union matters within one working day. And those centres are at our own Northwood nuclear HQ, Royal Navy, with 100 EU staff in it. There's one in Paris and there's one in Potsdam in Germany, which we saw CGRM go over and activate, we believe. And there's another one in Greece. So this spin from Brexit Central is utter nonsense. So if any of you have got the capability to pound their Twitter with trying to straighten them out, we've had a go of it, but please all of you join in. And let's stop this spin because it's not helping the correct debate.
Right, David, thank you for that. Now let's bring in Johnny Mercer. Now Johnny Mercer is of course a candidate at the moment, but he was one of the Conservative Party MPs in the Plymouth area, extremely close to where we are. We might have already been his constituency.
I think we are.
But here's the headline: Army hero MP gagged by Tories. Johnny Mercer accuses the party HQ of trying to block his election in 2015 over war veterans campaign. Now, this man's produced a book, but what he's started to say is the Tories started to gag, control him, and indeed, I would say, threaten him because he was starting to give too much support to the veterans and he was starting to be too outspoken about the government's appalling treatment of British war veterans. So let's have a look at, we put those quotes from that Mail article on screen so that they were a bit clearer, but thank you for the Daily Mail for this. And I've also made it in the first person there, so it's got more impact. I was summoned to a meeting at Tory HQ by two officials. I was told by one that I needed to be really careful and to give up on trying to win his seat. Now, I need to be really careful. That, to me, is an implied or inferred threat, whatever it is. It's not nice. Summoned to Tory HQ. He goes on, the Tory HQ official added, why do you think you should be supported? Who do you think you are? What have you done with your life? Now, remember, we've criticised Johnny Mercer over a number of issues, but I absolutely recognise that this man has been out in Afghanistan and he's put his life on the line. And look at the way he says that he's been treated by Tory HQ. He said he was summoned to a second meeting at the Tory HQ in which Sir Linton Crosby, who is also in charge of the 2017 campaign, told him, "You ain't gonna win, mate." Now, I was fascinated by the language, "You ain't gonna win, mate," and I wondered who that sir was. Well, let's have a look at who Mr. Crosby is. This is the Mirror article, and you've got a picture of him on the right-hand side. I just want to bring in a bit of comment here. This is to do with the fact that people are saying, does this man owe some tax? So just a snapshot of the Mirror article, which I'll encourage you to read. Latest accounts show this company vehicle paid out 826,000 in dividends in 2015, when Crosby was working in the UK to help David Cameron win the election. Sir Linton, known for his, quote, attack dog style of PR campaigning, was due to receive $150,000. As he is a non-dom, he doesn't live basically in the UK for tax purposes. He would not need to cough up UK duty on it so long as it does not come into Britain. He insisted the firm was not set up to avoid tax, but refused to reveal what it does. One of his business partners in Rutland is anonymous, hidden behind a Maltese trust. There's no suggestion that he's done anything illegal, but we get a snapshot into what sort of man this is. So this was the headline, Theresa May's election guru in tax haven scandal after pocketing six-figure sum.
But
do you get a warm feeling about this, Mike?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it not the Tory party that was running anti-corruption conferences and was pushing forward with the Panama Papers campaign to deal with exactly this issue of tax havens and tax avoidance?
Indeed. This is the duplicity, this is the double standards, and sorry, we just pop the comment in here. This man's an Australian propagandist. I've given him the label propagandist, but he's Australian. He's not even British. So we've got this Australian brought in to give his propaganda expertise to hide the truth about a number of issues, but particularly the destruction of Britain's military. David, I'll let you comment on this, but I'll say to you, I want to cover just a couple more slides, and we're going to be getting back on the subject of veterans for Britain. But this is remarkable, as Mike says, isn't it? We've got this man clearly controlling what Britain's Prime Minister says. He's not even British.
Well, the plain truth of it here is clearly is, and we've got to thank Johnny Mercer for this revelation, because it confirms everything that we've been saying and warning of for quite some time. Both you guys here at the UKC and both what we're saying is that this avenue that Johnny Mercer was going down in supporting the veterans was in conflict, in effect, to master policy on EU military unification and EU military union. So if he'd have carried on down there, he possibly would have started getting to the truth and really what was going on. Now, as we've said all along, the crisis in the Tory party is not the EU. They don't have a problem with that. What they have a problem with is you cannot sell EU military unification and EU military union to the British people at the ballot box. So therefore, they're not going to talk about it. And this is why this is him saying that he was gagged. This is exactly the case. This is entirely linear with our experience of what we found with ministers and lords and backbenchers. They cannot, will not talk about it. There's a refusal to talk about it. You found this, Brian, because you can't get Gary Streeter to talk about it. You can't get Oliver Colville to talk about it because they're going to be whipped, probably by this Mr. Crosby and whoever else at CCHQ, a Tory party top brass. So, the bottom line here is, if he'd have pursued and gone down this and opened the Conservative Party's Pandora's box, and I'm entirely with Peter Hitchens on this, and I've got to thank him for picking up a tweet that we've just done this morning, that the bottom line is he would have been deselected. He would have lost his job, like they did to Rupert Allenson when he went against them in Maastricht. So this is Theresa May's nasty party. This is what we're dealing with. They're quite happily going to try and, railroad this Veterans Gate. So, everybody look at it. Hashtag Veterans Gate. This is the cold reality of the Tory party.
OK, so let's recap from what we covered last week. We were having a look at Veterans for Britain. We put up this diagram. Top right, we've got a gentleman called David Banks, head of communications at Veterans for Britain. Now, that organisation is standing up and saying it is campaigning against government cuts. It is there for the veterans of Britain, the military veterans. It is warning about what's happening with the EU. We say this organisation is at best half-hearted in any criticism of the government. Why would that be? Well, what we showed in this diagram is how there was a massive network of Tory-controlled organisations with people from the Conservative Party or pro-Conservative organisations like Conservative Home operating through a number of organisations. So we've got the Conservative Home linked in to Taxpayers Alliance, it's linked into Vote Leave, it's linked into Business in Britain, Brexit Central, and we had links between Veterans for Britain and Change Britain, which is also linked through to, there we are, linked through to Brexit Central. So remembering that, let's put that on screen and then just add a bit. Well, we were curious about this gentleman, David Roach. He happens to be a business partner of David Banks. David Roach involved in a very interesting company, which is supposedly about getting us out of the EU. But this man himself also absolutely on board with the highest levels of the Tory party. So on the screen there now, the older gentleman, top right, is Sir Patrick McLoughlin, who happens to be Tory party chairman. But we're also most interested that he has taken over from Oliver Letwin as Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. So this man, appointed technically by the Queen to that role, but of course on recommendation of the Prime Minister. And what's his job? To look after the Queen's purse. So we're dealing in some pretty high-level people here. But these same people say we're going to challenge the Tory party because they're not doing what they say they're doing to get us out of the European Union. This is a massive propaganda operation to keep the lid on pressure that we know that's building amongst the military veterans. And if anybody, you know, doubts what we're saying here, have a look at the material yourself. You can go to Campany's house. Here's Imagine Exit Limited, these gentlemen involved with. And I put this comment, isn't it interesting? Imagine Exit, because there isn't an exit. Brexit is a complete, it's not real, so we might as well imagine we're coming out, but we're not. And we come back to the original criticism that here's Veterans Today.
For Britain.
I do beg your pardon, Veterans for Britain. So what are they doing here? They're putting up a list of things to challenge the candidates in this election, but there's nothing of substance. I believe that what we're watching is a very, very clever, very devious propaganda exercise to make sure that genuine military veterans in Britain simply stay silent. It's like a pressure valve for them. David, sorry, over to you.
Sounds a bit like UKIP then, doesn't it? Is that the same sort of model? Anyway, nothing against the main body of UKIP Church. You know, we've got a lot of really, really good contacts in the coalface at UKIP. Okay, this is really great, isn't it? Because Patrick McLoughlin, upon invite from us, has completely avoided taking a meeting with us to talk about EU military unification and EU military union. It's not as if we haven't offered numerous times. And yet he'll quite happily sit there with Mr. Roach, who's a former Tory party candidate in East Lothian, was it, I believe?
Correct.
So, you know, we're seeing a repeat thing. So let's just reiterate. One thing we are certain of is that the top brass in the Conservative Party, Mr. Crosby, Coe and whatnot, are desperate to keep the lid on this. And they are desperate to keep control of the senior officers that are speaking out and have spoken out previously, for fear that they will start using the correct terms of reference to what is actually taking place with Britain's military. And that is Her Majesty's Armed Services, lock, stock and all her barrels are being surrendered into EU military unification process. And if the great body of our nation, regardless of whatever party they favoured, would en masse the majority, and I will quote General Lord Dannett, would not support it, but they don't know about it. It's being kept from them, and it's being kept from them deliberately. So there isn't hard enough challenging going on within this group. Are bitterly disappointed with their performance. And you quite rightly, Brian, are asking these questions legitimately. So you know, if we could see some traction, I would be very pleased. But one thing I am certain of is that there is a definite attempt in order to keep control of the officers. I am certain of that.
Okay, well, we have a very good team now that are researching this whole subject of the Conservative propaganda network. We've got a lot more information to come out yet, and of course we'll be delighted to have you on board to comment. I'll just end the section here. A lot of people are saying, what do we do at an election? What do we do? Well, to me, you only have to look in Theresa May's eyes to know what sort of woman this is. Immensely dangerous. The best advice we can give, and it was the best advice that the speakers at AV8 came out with, is whatever you do, do not vote Conservative. If we can put a stop to this march for the Tory dictatorship, we can buy time to get more good people out of the woodwork. Mike.
Right. We'll end with Donald Trump's journeys. He visited Riyadh, of course, where he was. Well, they issued the Riyadh Declaration. It was really fantastic. They were forming a Middle East strategic alliance. And of course, they were focusing on attacking, at least rhetorically at the moment, Iran. And they were accusing Iran, they were calling them a general enemy because they're just destabilizing the region, apparently. They pledged to combat terrorism in all its forms, address its intellectual roots, dry up its sources of funding, and take all necessary measures to prevent and combat terrorist crimes in close cooperation among their states. So that is a particularly worrying statement. So let's understand things. Trump went to Riyadh, where, as you can see, he was given a nice gong.
He's bowing, I presume, there, is he? Or is that just to get his head through the noose?
It may just be to get his head through the noose. But he gets a nice gong, and he says that they're going to combat terrorism in all its forms. They're going to address its intellectual roots, dry up its sources of funding. Is he going to attack the British Foreign Office? No comment.
Very serious news today, and as usual, we've started a laugh because what we're reporting is so bizarre. It's straight out of The Simpsons.
Absolutely. So then where did he go? Well, he headed off to Israel, where he spoke to and had a fun with Netanyahu. And of course, Wall Street Journal here saying they're casting Iran as a common enemy there. So here we have a common enemy to Riyadh, a common enemy to Israel. So this is all really good stuff. Now, of course, if we look back at the Riyadh Declaration, they said that they were going to take all the necessary measures to prevent and combat terrorist crimes. Well, perhaps between the governments of Saudi Arabia, the United States and Israel, they could all just resign en masse. Perhaps that might be the best way to prevent and combat terrorist crimes. Well, what did the Iranians have to say? They didn't say that because I forgot to update the details on it, so I do apologise. But basically, the newly re-elected Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, who's on screen, said that he called what was going on between Trump and Saudi Arabia a theatrical gathering with no practical or political value. He said the Americans do not know our region. That's the problem. Those who are advising the Americans are unfortunately rulers who deviate America with unsound advice and buy some influence in the US with their money. When they attack Afghanistan, they made a mistake. When they attacked Iraq, they made a mistake. When they imposed sanctions on Iran, they made a mistake. If you know of a case where America acted correctly, please tell me. So that was the Iranians' response.
Just say that we just missed a little bit of the information on that slide, Mike. So we just
I did mention that.
Yeah. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's not forget what Saudi Arabia is doing in Yemen, and Donald Trump has managed to sell them a whole bunch more U.S. Arms and material, so they can continue to bomb the hell out of Yemen and kill millions of people, lots of people. For as long as they like.
But that's not terrorism, of course.
Apparently not, no.
Okay. Right, one to go, I think.
No, that's it.
Well, that's it, yeah. Right. Well, I'm going to say, David Ellis, thank you very much for joining us. We'd love you back for another slot to follow up on this business of the military. as we see Britain turned into a police state by the conservative dictatorship, of course, what they want to do is make sure that Britain's military, and particularly the military veterans, are not in a position to help the public. So many people unhappy at Britain's military operating overseas, doing what it's doing. But I will say to you today that at the end of the day, we need the support of our military to ensure that Britain's public are fully protected. So some very dangerous stuff going on here. I'll end by saying thank you very much to Ian Crane for his really outstanding effort with the Aviate conference at the weekend. As I said, it was packed, wonderful speakers, wonderful people. And although some of the subjects very, very serious, some of them harrowing, what was quite remarkable was to see that audience interacting in a very human way. People talking, speaking, laughing and joking. It was almost like we were in a little bubble of what the world was, what it should be, and not the world that the Conservatives in particular are trying to create. I must say thank you to the people who made donations to us. We had several people give donations to the UK column, and I'm going to say thank you very much to that. A very, very generous donation, which we have to pass through to the Metropolitan Police whistleblower, John Wedger. That was truly wonderful. And I'm going to say a big thank you to the people who personally gave me books, including a truly impressive Bible. Wonderful book, very heavy, had trouble lifting my bag on the way home. But it was really quite an inspiring event. So thank you very much to all those people that attended, and particularly the ones who gave UK Column support. That's it for today. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.